Covered in Glory is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, must be 21 years or older. Another edition of Covered in Glory presented by Omaha. And Brett, I am still reeling from the week we had in the Champions League. I know we talk primarily about the Premier League on this program, but it is hard to ignore when the continental competition is this good. We're going to dive into it a little bit more, but what was your first reaction to what you've seen so far midweek?
Nothing matters. And XG doesn't matter anymore. Stats don't matter. Real Madrid just find ways to do things in the Champions League. I think it was a little surprising. The Arsenal-Bayern match is the one that really stood out to me, just because of the fact that we saw them struggle against Porto. Bayern kind of came in looking like flat track bullies a little bit. They've really racked up some pretty impressive XG figures by just running up scores and creating chances against some of the bottom teams in the league. And then here they are, you know, they go to the Emirates and they get a great result. And now they're in the driver's seat in that second leg. So it's just such a fun, weird sport where you're just always trying to find a data set and figure out where you're at. And you know, I think sometimes you can read a little too much into these games and change your opinion a little too far. But I mean, it definitely was something where it made you love the magic of soccer, that you can get all these crazy goals and get all these and get these wonderful matches. But at the same token, it also makes soccer make even less sense than it normally does.
My two big takeaways are, one, what you just said, which is, God, I love this sport. It is so fun to follow. It is so unpredictable. And like the way that I spent Tuesday and Wednesday watching those games, like I feel bad for people who don't watch it. It's almost like March Madness year round. Like, you want a great Thursday afternoon sporting experience, like, just watch Europa. Like, you don't have to wait till March for college basketball to get it on in the middle of the workday in the week. The second takeaway is, these games are too awesome for us to ignore. So we've restructured the show this week. We are only going to do three Premier League games. We are going to throw away the City and Arsenal Premier League games against Luton and Aston Villa. And we are going to focus on the second leg of the quarterfinals in our Going Abroad segment. So we'll circle back, have a lot more thoughts on this in about a half hour. Before that, though, Brett, there's another magical weekday sporting event happening right now here in America at Augusta National with the Masters. And so what are your favorite sporting events? And so, given the crossover this week between the Excellent Champions League and the Masters starting, wanted to throw a question out your way. I think pretty much inarguably the star of the Masters is the venue itself. The course itself is the absolute star. Like, yes, there are people who are going to go there to watch Tiger. Yes, there are going to be people who go there to watch Rory or Scotty or anybody else. But the lottery is oversubscribed by like 1,000 times the number of tickets they could have every single year forever, regardless of who's on the course. So I really think it just comes down to the course itself. And like, it's the top of my sports bucket list. And I've seen a lot of great sporting events. It's the top of my sports bucket list because I just want to walk the course. I'll go to a practice round. I'll go, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't care about the competitive nature. I just want to experience the venue. So do you think there's anything equivalent to that in the world of soccer? Like, there's Wrigley Field and Fenway in baseball. I think maybe Lambeau in the NFL. You can certainly name some iconic college stadiums where you really just, you're there because you want to check out the venue itself. Do you think anything in soccer rises to that level?
As an Everton fan, I feel like I'm going to get something thrown at my head by saying this. But the Anfield experience just seems like it is by far and away. You've seen the videos, you know, when they'll play them or they'll be all over YouTube of, you know, singing You'll Never Walk Alone. Their home effect, like even this year, if you look at like their numbers at home, like there is a very clear Anfield effect. Like, Liverpool just dominate at Anfield. And part of it's because they're really good, but this is like past just being a really good team that's playing at home. And so that experience looks absolutely incredible. You know, I mean, the weird thing for me, at least in the generation where I came up, is like, I'm sure Camp Nou and the Bernabeu are amazing places to play, but they were always just so connected to the two iconic players of their generation, like mm-hmm. Messi and Ronaldo. And so I think like in some ways those players like overshadowed probably the magic of watching an event in there, because you talked about Augusta, you know, you want to go walk the course. Like you just love to see the course and the history there and all those things. But like, if I'm going to the Bernabeu, like I'm going to watch Ronaldo, right? Like that's the idea yeah. that's in my head. If I'm going to Camp Nou, like I'm going to watch Messi, right? And obviously those two players have departed and all that. And so it seems like even with their departure, like those have stopped being destination things for me, because yeah. I would have only have wanted to go there to watch Messi play for Barcelona. You know what I mean? Yeah. So the Anfield one is the difference though, because, you know, I mean, I think Trent Alexander-Arnold is great and Mo Salah is great and Darwin is just chaotic, productive, fun player, but that experience looks amazing. But I just wouldn't wear an Everton shirt when I walked in there.
You better not. I think that's a great answer. What you're talking about a lot there is ambiance and passion and things like that. And like, I agree with you about Bernabeu and Camp Nou and what you're talking about associated with certain players. I mean, you're talking about a little more timeless element when it comes to the fans, because the fans pass through the generations more than the guys on the field. And so that's a slightly different list for me, which is like the best in-game experience. The way I approached it was more like, hey, I would take a stadium tour. I would actually travel there just to see the place itself. And I think the number one answer has got to be Wembley, like, right? Like, is it Wembley the closest equivalent we have to Augusta? Like Augusta, we mentioned this on Trendy. It's the only one of the majors that never changes. Like it's at the same course every single year. Wembley to me is what screams the heart of football. And I know they rotate big games. I know they rotate around the world and things like that. But to me, that seems to be this epicenter of where our lovely hobby really is located.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a great one as far as like a pretty traditional iconic stadium. But for me, one of the ones that I kind of threw in as like a dark horse one would be Signal Iduna Park. That's Dortmund's home park.
On my list.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right. So you have that one on the list. I that was the one I was saving for the end here as far as stadium talk, but partially because I loved those early like 2010 teams that were like making runs in the Champions League when Klopp was like coming up. Those teams were awesome. And I just remember watching those matches being like, dude, that looks so crazy to watch like a Champions League match in that stadium. Like that would be so cool to go to that
dude,
park.
One grandstand. That grandstand holds 28,000 people, right? Like, isn't it the yeah. largest grandstand in Europe? Like, it is absolutely bananas. That is 100% on my list. Like, it's almost like Fenway, right? Like, with the green monster. Like, having a grandstand that large is so unique and so nuts. I would yeah. love to go experience it. Let me throw out a couple more. Then I'll ask you if you have anybody else on your list besides Signal Iduna. Because you know me and my list, I really researched this. I really looked into it. I think some more dark horses, is the, and I'm, this is also the part of the show where I just butcher pronunciations, which is cute because I think I'm not doing it. I do it later in the show as well. But the Stade Velodrome in Marseille is just gorgeous architecture that dates way back. Like that would be really, really cool to go check out. Similarly, Celtic Park, built in 1892, just a gorgeous old stadium. That is kind of like, again, Wrigley and Fenway, where it's just like, yeah. okay, the history here is so old and it's so incredible that you just have to like go drink it in, like visiting a church in Italy or something like that.
Yeah, that was on my list as well. The other ones are a little more probably closer to just like my experience. So I grew up, you know, we were around the same age. So we watched Clint Dempsey play at Fulham. I always kind of wanted to go see Craven Cottage just because yes. it looks like such a weird, homey little stadium. I thought
that's a great name. Is that the best name? Yeah. Is that the best name of any stadium?
Absolutely. Like Craven Cottage yeah. like, just makes you feel like it doesn't make you feel like, you know, like we talk about the NFL watching experience sometimes on Trendy And it's just such a weird, you know, like thing of like American like capitalism. All the stadiums are cold and they're just gigantic. And, you know, they have all these like corporate booths and box seats and all this stuff. Like, and then you're just like, oh, I'm going to go watch a game at Craven Cottage. It's like, hey, I'm going to go drive up to the lake and watch some soccer, right?
British, extremely British. Like you have to drink a pint of dark beer in front of a fire and then walk over to Craven Cottage and you instantly get a British citizenship, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the last one, you won't be surprised at this one. I think I need to see a game at Goodison Park. I mean, it is a relatively iconic and classic stadium in its own right. It's kind of one of the last of the old guard stadiums. So I mean, it does have, other than me being an Everton supporter, it does have, you know, some kind of historic value and appeal. I think that would be a really cool one to go watch a match at as well.
Well, go see it before they knock it down.
Yes, exactly. I'm against the clock on that one.
You are against the clock. I have been to Stamford Bridge, so that one's checked off my list. I'm talking about ones I haven't seen yet. I've also been to the San Siro, so that one's not on here. But other ones, you want to get a little more exotic. The Maracana in Rio is just I mean, you talk about history of the sport, like the number of great players that have passed through there. And it's also just beautiful on television. Similarly, Soccer City in South Africa, that like iconic exterior that we kept seeing in the 2010 World Cup with that like bronze shimmering in the African sun, I would absolutely like to go check out. The Allianz Arena is not only iconic in Munich with the changing colors, but it's also the hallowed ground of the 2012 Chelsea victory. So at some point I have to make the pilgrimage there. And then there's some super weird ones. The Float in Singapore, which is just a floating floating platform out in the water. And there's a big grandstand on the shore, but then they put up nets everywhere. Like, I just have to go see this at some point. It's so weird and so cool. I'd love to see a match there. And like, I think about 25,000 people can go, but you have to sit on the shore and watch because it's like almost on like a naval vessel, like out into the water. There's also a stadium carved into a cliff in Norway. I think it's called the Hennesvar. That
sounds dope.
Yeah. It has no stands, so they can't have professional matches there. They can't sell tickets. But look at the pictures. It's unbelievable. Then there's the Blue Arc in South Korea with the mountains hovering out in the open. Victoria Stadium in Portugal, which is right up against the Rock of Gibraltar. Like, all these cool things I really want to see. The last one, I think that's super iconic, that you want to talk about, like, match day ambiance to go along with a place like Anfield. The Bombonera down in Boca for Boca Juniors is a place I have to see before I die. Like, they have the flat wall.
Mm-hmm.
That is just like straight vertical with the three stands around it. And there's something like it's not equivalent, but the only thing even close to equivalency I've experienced in my life is, as you well know, and as people listen to Trending knows, I went to UVA. Our rivals, Virginia Tech, have a stadium with an extraordinarily steep bank, and they crowd that's where they put the student section, and then they play Enter Sandman. And the whole student section jumps and the whole like wall just starts moving up and down. And the echo is just unbelievable. I hate to give them credit for anything, but it is awesome. And then you amplify that like 10 times for a Boca game or an Argentina game. And they say when Boca scores, that whole wall moves up and down with the people kind of hanging on. So that's the other thing I really want to see. None of them maybe rack up to Augusta, but I think we're a little closer than I thought before I did the exercise.
Yeah, no, I mean, those sound great. I do have to say, I'm sorry, I know they are a rival of your alma mater, but that Virginia Tech football opening is one of the coolest things in sports. Yeah. I used to go work out, I'd go watch that video and just get just fired up and get the testosterone going. So,
nothing like losing to your rivals when they also have a better stadium than you.
It makes
for a long drive back to Seville, which I've unfortunately done more than once. All right, Brett. Well, I think that we should give out some picks, and I think I should bet $1 million each so I can just go tour the stadiums and retire from everything else because I would just want to go do this. It's actually what I did growing up. My dad tried to take me to every Major League Baseball stadium before I left for college, which is another reason why I do this. And in my retirement, I want to go full circle in life and travel around the world going to soccer stadiums. So see if we get a head start on that retirement fund right after this.
You know, when the conversation turns tampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up, OmahaFull. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager. Returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, Brett, enough tourism to the here and now, and we are going to start on Saturday morning in the Premier League with Newcastle, 8th at 47 points versus Tottenham, 4th at 60 points. This game is going off at 7:30 a.m. Spurs are plus 125, Newcastle's plus 170, the draw is plus 300. Spurs minus half a goal is plus 125, and Newcastle is minus 160. Oh, how does Tottenham keep getting away with this? I know that's a popular meme throughout the internet, and it's crazy how many different teams that can apply to. Like, you feel that way about United, I feel that way about the Spurs, and now we enter into another matchup where they might get away with it again. How are you feeling about Newcastle and Spurs?
Toby, I'm in the midst of an epic cold streak, and the thing I would want to do to break out of that is avoid betting anything to do with either of these two teams. This is not the way you break a slump, is just try to figure out how to handicap any match that either of these two random, sometimes reeling, sometimes okay, sometimes good teams are playing. I had no inclination. I looked at this match for a good 45 minutes, looked at every line, I looked at FBref. I was trying to figure out lineups and all this other stuff that maybe to give me, point me in some direction. And then I just was like, you know what? I don't care what Toby's going to say. I can't figure out what separates these two. Newcastle's been reeling. Spurs are weirdly okay on the road. And you're getting the draw at almost 3-1. So it's like, I'm taking the draw. I'm sorry. Like, I'm just taking the draw.
So I don't all think I could Spurs, get to. I don't think the Spurs are weirdly okay on the road. And Newcastle is a crazy place to play. Like, you want to talk about great stadiums. Tottenham definitely qualifies with their new stadium. Like, some people would say it's one of the 10 or 20 best stadiums in the world, even though it doesn't have the history that the other places do, but in terms of the actual facility. And they are packing fans in, creating an awesome ambiance. And I think when I keep saying, oh, the Spurs keep getting away with it, it feels very home game related. Like, they keep riding the emotions of this giant crowd to carry them to late game victories. I mean, that feels more, a little more anecdotal, but I think that's been happening since last year. And Newcastle's not that. Like, they've got to go up to the Scottish border and take on these people. And I don't see it. And the last six road games was for the Spurs, was a West Ham draw, a Fulham loss 3-0. They did beat down Aston Villa really bad at Aston Villa. The 2-2 draw versus Everton, the 2-2 draw versus United, and a 4-2 loss to Brighton. So I feel like I'm having a little bit of selective amnesia, and I think that they keep like stealing games, but I think they're doing it at home. So I went with the Newcastle double champs here. I respect the odds on the draw plus 300, but I think the Spurs can lose this game. The Newcastle hasn't lost to a non-Big Six team in 2024. They've been taking care of teams they should beat. And I'm still not convinced the Spurs are a Big Six club. I know what the points say. I know they're going to qualify for the Champions League. I know everything, but I still have eyes. The very premise of the show to start with is you're the stats nerd, not the guy on the couch. And my eyes say they do not rise to the level that Newcastle necessarily will struggle with them like they do Arsenal, City, Liverpool, and I don't want to say United, but even United, the data is the data. So I'm going to take Newcastle minus 160, either get the win or the draw, as the Spurs do not get away with it on the road.
Yeah, I mean, the table that I was referring to is Opta had tweeted out a graphic, and Spurs are, I think, were one of like five or six teams that actually had a positive goal differential on the road. Newcastle, St. James Park, Newcastle plays extremely well there. So I think there is a good chance that that may cancel out the fact that the Spurs are one of the better teams, at least statistically by expected goals, which Madrid and City have told us XG doesn't matter. So I totally get that. And believe me, this was every outcome was on the table for me. I could have talked myself into every outcome. This is, like I said, this was a tough one as someone that's in a little bit of a skid to be like, oh, you got to pick a winner out of this game. So the one that I think I would, and I will be, you know, putting in my 5 pint here is to try to turn things around, is the over of 3.5 goals is minus 115. We know that Newcastle's slide was mainly a result of the fact that the bottom fell out for them defensively. And a lot of it was a player like Joel Linton, who weirdly was a striker when he was acquired, got moved back into the midfield, but he helped them build this kind of bruising, foul, you know, prone, like football, like American football type midfield. And coinciding with his injury and a few others, and I think Kieran Trippier is just getting older, and he wasn't a very good defender to begin with, and he's almost 33 now. I don't think the defense is going to fix itself. And then we all know your opinion on Spurs and their strategy as far as defending in soccer matches. So we know they're prone. So I don't think it's a great number, but I do think that this game has huge potential to one of these teams to get four on their own. So I like that you can get four total for this, even if you eat the juice, which isn't great.
Brett, if you want to break a slump, follow me, my friend, because it is time once again.
Oh, boy.
Quarterback!
Yep.
It's been well over a month since I have done this. I don't like to break it out every single week. I am not on a slump, but I am happy to help you bust yours, my friend. Because the Spurs have 17 corners in their last two games, and Newcastle has 21 corners in their last two games. Meanwhile, the Spurs concede 6.2 a game, while Newcastle concede 4.9. Newcastle also racked up six corners in the reverse fixture back in December. So I am going to do it slightly different than I normally do, but you know dang well this is giving me my 5 pint, because I've never given out a corner bet that I didn't actually back. And it is a same game parlay. Newcastle to take over 4.5 corners, combined with Spurs to take over 3.5 corners. You get that at a plus number, Brett. If you were to bet the over under on total corners, you'd have to take 11. This way you can hit at 9 and you actually get better value. And I like the both teams to contribute to the total in close to equal measure, but Newcastle to take one more to take you to that plus territory. So take your SGP, do it instead of just a simple over 10.5 and get to plus 105 on this bet.
Hey, I misread my notes, and that was actually my bet too. Super weird. I looked at it, I was like, don't read this part, read that bet. And I just totally spaced. So yeah, great bet, because I had the same one.
Yeah, no, savesies. I'm gonna go ahead and hear you scream about it next time. Corner bet. I gotta send out the bat signal, baby. I'm back. I'm undefeated, but I do think it is my highest actual percentage of any bet I make on any show.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I love the cadence too, because it just, every time you say it, it's like the old Leroy Jenkins meme. It's just the same thing. It just like gets me to that same place. You saying corner bet and me hearing Leroy Jenkins, I go to the same place.
And Leroy Jenkins loved to create chaos and let everybody scatter, which also would lead to a lot of corners. So
there you go. Leroy Jenkins is your spirit animal.
He's
episode title animal. Right there. Bang.
Leroy Jenkins is not my spirit animal, but he is custom made to play midfield for Tottenham.
There we go. You got it.
All right. Next one. We got Liverpool second at 71 points versus Crystal Palace 14th at 30 points. Sunday at 9 a.m. Liverpool is minus 475. Crystal Palace is plus 1,100. The draw is plus 550. Pool on the adjusted minus a goal and a half is minus 160. Crystal Palace is plus 125. So, Brett, we talked about the three-way title race last week, and now we have our answer to who's going to blink first. Unbelievably, it was Liverpool, as they were shockingly unable to take advantage of United's defensive injury crisis. I'm, of course, not talking about the four center backs being out. I'm talking about Harry Maguire still being in. That is a tough break for United fans, a tough break for Liverpool to not be able to take advantage of that because of a couple of wonder strikes from United. How many players in the Premier League do you think would have scored Fernandez's goal? Because I think a lot of guys would attempt it. Actually, let me rephrase. I think very few people actually have the vision to attempt it. And of that subset who have the audacity to try, most of them would have missed. So I think it's like KDB, Fernandez, maybe Trent Alexander-Arnold, maybe a couple other that can hit that thing one time with that level of precision to score from midfield to catch a goalkeeper off his line. And he did it to freaking Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, I, as someone who, again, is trying to break out of a slump and had Liverpool to win that match, I mostly just said, what the F? And didn't appreciate any of the beauty of it for multiple reasons. One, it's like, yep, this is when you run bad, like this is the sign. Like this is the sign that just slaps you in the face, being like, you know what? You're in the middle of a bad run right now.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it was a crazy mixture of incredible technical ability, incredible execution, incredible vision, like, and just like audacity, you know, to try things like that in that big of a match. And it was different. The reason they hung on to the draw was that goal. So, yeah. I mean, otherwise they're losing 2-1. But I mean, yeah, as far as players that can do it, I mean, there's definitely like a handful of guys. I mean, Wayne Rooney had the pretty crazy one when he was at Atlanta United. I remember that one pretty clearly. But this one was pretty special. I mean, you're talking about maybe 10, 12 guys in the Premier League that could probably pull it off.
Yeah, Manu's goal was incredible as well. I mean, those were both just absolute bangers. And then that was before we got to the mixtape that was the City-Real Madrid game, which we'll get to in a second. I mean, you say that United only won because of that Fernandez wonder strike. Like, Liverpool got a little bit bailed out there, no? Like, that penalty, which was just a moment of madness, created this tie late in that game. And without that, they don't even get 1 point out of this clash.
Well, I mean, you could say, yeah. I mean, most penalties are, you know, the rush of blood of the head type of stuff where guys just make a mistake. But this is the whole point of like piling on chances and pinning opponents in their defensive third, is that the longer that the ball is in those areas, the greater the chance somebody's going to do something stupid and you're going to get a penalty out of it. And I mean, look, the XG in that game, not that XG apparently matters anymore. But I mean, Liverpool dominant, like it was like 3.1 to like 0.7. So it was completely one-sided, lopsided game by XG, expected threat, total shots, however you want to do it. And so, I mean, I don't really classify that as luck. It just was Liverpool dominating the game and catching that break because they created the opportunity to get lucky.
Well, look, we're taping this on Thursday afternoon, and as we were taping, Liverpool just got shellacked by Atalanta 3-0. Is this a good thing for Liverpool? Is this a good thing for this title race? Like, what should they be prioritizing now that they blinked and are no longer in direct control of their own destiny? Do they need to pile everything into the Premier League, or is like a 3-0 loss in the Europa, which is one of the other trophies they could have won this year, is that a disaster for them that they probably can't dig themselves out of?
I mean, I think we tend to do this thing as fans by thinking of these guys, especially when we throw out the phrase Klopp and Pep are two of the best managers. That doesn't mean they're always playing 4D chess. And these guys are hyper-competitive. It's Klopp's last season. So you would think, in the grand scheme of things, they'd go, well, all this stuff is useless outside of winning the Premier League. You know, we don't get huge boost of revenue for, in terms of Liverpool, you know, where their money comes from. Winning the FA Cup, winning the Carabao Cup doesn't matter. You know, winning Europa, yeah, it's a nice boost. They're making some revenue for it, but like, they're already qualified for the Champions League, basically. So they don't need to win it to get in, and that's where they want to be. So in theory, this whole season, and Liverpool for the most part has done that. They've rotated fairly well throughout Europa, but you would think this would just be a tournament where they're just like, yeah, we're gonna literally just play like the kids unless we get to the final. And then when we get to the final, we'll actually field our senior starting 11 and we'll try to win the final there.
They did play
a great manager like Klopp is a human being. He wants to win every trophy imaginable, especially on his way out. So I don't think they're going to just like throw in the towel. If they lose the next leg and they're out, like, it is a boost. You're 100% right. They lose those extra games, that's a big boost for them.
Well, I think one reason I'm talking about Europe and whether they should be throwing it away is I don't want to talk about Crystal Palace. So enough time wasting. I said they suck last week. I think they still suck this week. Nothing has changed my mind. Borderline relegation level club. Give me Liverpool in the adjusted minus a goal and a half. Playing angry, coming off that wasted opportunity last week and then losing here midweek. I like it even more at minus 160.
Yeah, I'm actually took it all the way up to -2.5 at plus 145. And then I'm combining that with pull the wind and nil at minus 105 because of the times we've talked about Palace. And look, I think Oliver Glasner is an interesting manager. I mean, Eintracht Frankfurt went on that crazy one in Europa. They got pretty lucky. But he had some interesting ideas. I think in general, like, lower table teams should play more back threes with wing backs because it kind of like plays everybody up a set. You know, you don't have that many good attackers anyway. So, like, why are you trying to play four? You can take a crappy winger, a.k.a. Victor Moses, and turn him into an amazing wingback. And then your so-so fullbacks, like a Joel Ward type, become really good. Though, is that hybrid, like, third center back that can carry the ball a little bit. So I think Glasner is interesting. I just don't think the talent's there, especially with Eze out. Michael Olise out. And Abrici Eze, we talked about this last week, he's just inherited the spirit of Wilfred Zaha. Zaha is super fun to watch. Like, he dribbles around guys and he gets in the box and he does some cool stuff. I think Eze kind of is in that mold. I think he might be a little more impactful to actually winning soccer matches, but he is definitely further on the fun factor than he is on the winning factor as far as a player goes.
So I had a realization watching that United game last week that it made me uncomfortable. Like, am I a Liverpool fan now? Like, not like an actual fan, but not like a supporter. But, like, I enjoy watching Nunez and Salah and Diaz so much. Am I actually, like, what's the word? I guess I'm just an appreciator. Like, I appreciate watching those guys so much more. I'm not supporting them. I'm not rooting for them. But I can't deny how much I enjoy watching it. And so, like, I looked at all three of their anytime goal scoring odds right now. And Nunez was minus 130, Salah is minus 150. And I actually think Diaz is in the best form of the three of them. He doesn't have the penalty equity that Mo has. But the way that he is anticipating the random bounce of the ball, in air quotes, and moving into the space ahead of the other 21 guys on the pitch – for relatively easy finishes is like really high level stuff. And not only has he always had that dog in him where he's tenacious, if he's going to have this high level of movement and he's going to correctly see the future like 2 seconds ahead of time, he's going to rack up a lot of goals and he's a plus number. So at plus 145, you like them all the way up to 2.5. That means they're going to score 3 or 4 times. I got to think that he's going to get one of them the way he's playing right now.
Yeah, I mostly the happy part for that or of hearing that for me was I have subliminally made you realize the value of XG and expected goal, because you talk about the like Nunez gets hammered for his finishing, right? Like that is a huge narrative with him. But the thing he does is what you just mentioned. This is his value. He keeps getting into spots to score, and that is huge. Like Edin Dzeko was a great striker for a ton of really high profile clubs. I mean, he was playing for Inter in the Champions League final, and he has underperformed his XG by 40 goals, but he was still a great striker. You know why? Because he kept getting into spots to take shots, and that's what Darwin does. That's what makes him good. And that is such a key point of how you have to look at players behind the narrative of their finishing ability.
I think the difference in just at least recency bias is Nunez is excellent at getting into dangerous spaces to receive the ball. Diaz just seems to be anticipating where the ball is going to end up, perhaps not on purpose. Like he's there for the reflection. He's there for the rebound. He's there for the flicked on header that, you know, the guy might not have been aiming for precisely Diaz, but he was aiming like towards the goal into a dangerous area. And Diaz is the only guy there because he saw the danger first. And so I think both of them are excellent, but it's slightly nuanced different things from the way I've been watching lately. And either way, it's why I am apparently an appreciator of Liverpool all of a sudden, even though it makes me a little bit sick. Okay. Things that make me sick. The very top of the list, who I actually am a fan of, would be Chelsea, 9th at 44 points versus Everton, 16th at 27 points. This game is Monday at 3 p.m., which is great because I get to prolong my agony all the way through the weekend. Chelsea is minus 150. Everton is plus 360. The draw is plus 320. Caesars has Chelsea minus half a goal at minus 160 and Everton at plus 125. So I think the segment where I just bitch about my favorite teams is probably a little bit overcooked right now. I'm going to allow you the chance to complain about your favorite team, Brett, here in the Covered in Glory Derby. And not only do you get to complain about them on the field, you can complain about it off the field as they get yet another point reduction, 2 more down. So what was your reaction to the additional point reduction? And are you nervous at all? Any more is coming and how that might shape your relegation thoughts?
It's just, I like feel nothing because it's such a, they weren't even doing anything shady. They were just incompetent. Like they're getting hammered because they were stupid and spent too much money and therefore are now getting hammered in all these investigations. Like this wasn't like them trying to like, but the whole stuff with City, like, you know, that's like forensic accounting and we got to track the money and all the little ghost corporations and how it fed back to City and all that other kind of stuff. Like Everton was basically like, hey, you know what's a good idea? Let's buy Davy Klaassen, Wayne Rooney, and Gylfi Sigurdsson in the same transfer window. And now, years later, because of that type of spending, we're going to eat a bunch of points and possibly get relegated from the Premier League. So it's like, I don't even have anything to really get mad about. It's just classic incompetence. They thought they were going to make way more money than they were. They thought they'd be way better than they were. They kept spending like a team that was in the Champions League, and now they're paying the piper. It's like, it's just stupidity. Yeah. I don't know. I guess I am getting a little worked up about it, but it's like,
yes, City is the OJ murder trial. Everton is the OJ memorabilia trial. It's like, it's like, okay, one of them was the trial of the century that, you know, guy might got away with something. The other one was like so straightforward, they had to put him in jail. Yeah. That's kind of what Everton has done here. And like their crime is actually stupidity, even though they're both like bad. Like the other one's probably the worst offense.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, what City was doing was clearly there was, you know, an actual attempt to evade the rules and the restrictions by funneling and moving money in ways that would hopefully trick anybody that was looking on the surface. Everton was just like, let's just keep shooting money out of a fire hose and we'll just see what happens. Like, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not super worried that more is going to come. I mean, they're still in a very favorable position to stay up. I mean, obviously if they lose a couple more points, they lose a big chunk of points. They're going to be at huge risk, but they're a pretty good team. And they play like a European caliber team at Goodison. They're not so great on the road, but when you're at that level of the table, like if you just play really well at home, you should be okay. So I'm not super worried about him. I mean, obviously a few fluky random results, you know, could change things, but I mean, they've also severely underperformed their XG in attack. Like Dominic Calvert-Lewin's had a really, really, really poor finishing season. And we haven't really seen anything like this from him before. It could be because he is an aerial guy, so he does get his head on a lot of balls for shots. Those are probably high variance ones. But it's been a team-wide thing. Like Everton have just underperformed their expected goal totals to a player. So it's been a collectively bad finishing season, which, you know, I mean, finishing skill is a thing. You can over and underperform XG consistently. Guys like Messi and Son and stuff like that are great, fantastic finishers. Everton just might have a team of really crap finishers. Like that could be a thing that's going on. But I also do think that they have a little bit of regression, like positive regression that could come for them here in the final stretch where they start finishing some chances. And, you know, Sean Dyche, you know, whether he listens to the analytics people or not, they do a great job of manufacturing goals off set pieces, which a struggling offensive team and a team in a relegation fight needs to do. They are neck and neck with Brentford as far as chances created off set pieces. So I'm not super worried about them. But that said, in this match in particular, although I stared at the money line for a while on Everton because Chelsea's Chelsea, I ended up going with the Chelsea money line because they are at home. And Enzo has that team fired up right now.
I do not think that being at home is an advantage for Chelsea at the moment. I mean, like, the fan base is out for blood. Like, not only are they protesting ownership, they've completely turned on Poch, and for good reason. Like, that guy is such a, let's just say, a kitty cat. He is doing these subs that as soon as we have a lead, and yes, I'm saying we, as soon as the club has a lead, he starts like going into his shell. He calls off the attack. I talked about this with Liverpool a couple of weeks ago. Like, it's the other reason I'm an admirer of Liverpool. They don't come off of the front foot. They stay on the front foot, and that is what gives them the advantage against these minnows. Poch instead starts playing like a minnow, comes down to their level, and concedes to Burnley and Sheffield. He's got to go. You asked me about this 2 weeks ago. I'm all the way out now. So not only do I say I'm not going to other this, the fan base has turned on him, including one Toby Mergler, who is all the way out on this guy, because I cannot watch us continue to do this against the Sheffields and Burnleys of the league. And even when we're not playing on the back foot, even when he's not doing these insane substitutions, like, what the freak is the point of bringing on Cassaday at 90+3? Like, you already were bringing in Badashiel. If you wanted to just time waste one guy and then sub another guy like a minute later, like, at least learn how to time waste efficiently. That means it wasn't time waste, and you were doing it tactically, bringing on a guy who has like 30 Premier League minutes to try to kill a game off on a set. Yikes. So he's got to go. So give me Everton. Give me Everton. Give me Everton on the double chance plus 125. Because if I'm going to be miserable, if they're going to play down to minnows, it's the minnows that I'm going to bet on. And I'm going to find every opportunity I can to actually profit from this misery and maybe give some money back to the club so they also don't take a point reduction and it can afford a new manager. Give me somebody with tactics. Give me somebody. I miss Sarri at this point. I miss somebody at least has a point of view who actually tries to implement it.
Yeah, I am feeling better and better. I have been on the Poch is a fraud that caught two teams that were up and coming at the right time. And I'm feeling better about that hot take that I've had. So, but in this match in particular, I am actually banking on him being conservative and Everton being bad finishing, because the under of 2.5 goals is only plus 135. Now, granted, in a Chelsea match, things can get off the rails really quickly, and that could end up looking like a horrible bet at one point. But as of right now, I think it's the smart play, especially getting plus money, because there is a very good chance that one or both of these teams score zero goals with the way that they play. So I really like that you're getting a plus number for under 2.5.
All right, I'm on another side of this because I'm on tilt with this team, and I'm not afraid to admit it. So here's a menu of how you could profit from my misery, dear listeners. Chelsea to score in the first half is minus 150. You know why they keep blowing games, Brett? Because they have leads. They have early leads. They have scored in the first half in seven consecutive games only to go ahead and squander it. So that's minus 150. You know how they squander it? They squander it late. So Everton to come from behind and win or draw is plus 500. That's another great place to take advantage of my misery. In order to do that, they have to score late. So to score in the second half, when he goes into his shell and starts becoming a kitty cat, that is plus 100. That is a even money bet you make on Everton. And finally, if you want to go all the way to really like, hey, this is not just a pattern. This is now like a real trend that you should follow. Chelsea, the Caesar has this bet. Chelsea to lead at halftime and not win is 10 to 1. Lead at halftime, not win, is 10 to 1. You don't need them to lose. You just lead them to not win. I love the value there.
Yeah. I mean, some of those bets still work with mine, too. So, I mean, they can lead 1-0 and end up not winning by the game being 1-1. So, yeah. A couple of those kind of track alongside each other.
All right. Well, let's get back to my happy place. Let's give our sponsors a chance for them to sell you a couple of things. And then let us talk about these amazing Champions League games.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, Brett, let's kick some butt here. I know it's almost a week away, but this is one of the great things about soccer gambling, friends. Like, it's not like the NBA where they won't post lines on games, you know, way in advance. We already have the lines for these games, and let's talk about them because they're going to happen before we record again. Let us start with Manchester City versus Real Madrid Wednesday at 3 p.m., 3-3 on aggregate right now. City is minus 145, Real Madrid is plus 360, the draw is plus 300. City minus half a goal is minus 145, Madrid is plus 115. As a reminder, in the second leg of a knockout tournament, those are 90-minute lines because they might end up going to extra time, but those are going to be ruled on the 90 minutes. If you want to take it all the way to qualify, City is minus 300, Madrid is plus 225. So, Brett, there's so much to cover, both looking back and looking forward to this game. Here, let me start here. KDB got ruled out at the very beginning of the game because he was throwing up in the pre-match and wasn't able to be out there. Do you think that made an impact on this match, or was it already so off the rails that not even injecting one of the 10 best players of the world could have changed the outcome?
I wonder, like, if you do butterfly effect, he probably takes that free kick instead of Silva. So, yeah, I don't know. That's weird. That's a really good question. I know on a podcast we're supposed to be certain of things, but I really don't know. That is a fascinating thing because that game definitely had a huge degree of randomness to it. And I think in a match with that much randomness, I can't imagine a single player affecting the outcome.
And also Foden was so good. Like, yeah. Foden was so good in that role. And so, like, how much of a even if he's one of the best players in the world, which he is, how much of a marginal upgrade is it over when Foden is going to play the way he played?
Yeah, I mean, there's that aspect, too. And, I mean, look, like, you know, Madrid is playing a really defensive lineup. Like, we forget about this because Tchouaméni was hurt for a decent amount. But this was one of the world's elite defensive midfielders that they have. Also a really young guy, you know, and Camavinga was out there and they're playing Valverde as kind of like a winger presser, you know, floating attacking midfielder, whatever you want to call it. So, I mean, there's clearly some things that Madrid was doing that I don't know if it would have mattered if KDB was out there or not. You know, because listen, like when they played Arsenal, City failed to create great chances in that match too, which is why we kind of complained a little bit about how boring it was. And I think Madrid has the capability of kind of shutting it down with these young, really good, you know, kind of more, well, at least the two of them, more defensive-minded midfielders, too.
But that's not really what we watched, right? Like, that was almost like they don't have all-star games in soccer. So the closest thing we have is like tribute matches where a bunch of retired guys come out, or, you know, some stars play in like a game in June and they just screw around. That's what we were watching. Like, they were just trying outrageous stuff over and over again. And I know you can't win the lottery if you don't buy a ticket. It actually made me wonder why there aren't more goals off of these crazy deflections for these world-class guys who strike the ball with so much power into crowded areas. But it also reflects how much space was in the game and how much the ball was in the attacking third and closer to the game where closer to the goal where shots could be generated, which is not what I expected, right? Like, that's not what Pep is known for. It's not the way I expected Tchouaméni and Real to play either. Like, were you surprised at the style of the game even more than the outcome?
Not really, because I think if you didn't get the crazy opening goals from Silva and Camavinga, well, I think Camavinga's goal is technically credited as an own goal. But I think that kind of like injected adrenaline into the match. It's one of those things where it's like there's these game states are very dynamic. If you take those goals away, we probably get the super cagey match that we got last time these guys played in Madrid. That was a really, you know, boring kind of stodgy affair. You know, this one, I think, like, you get these crazy goals and then Madrid goes up right away again with Rodrigo, and then City's playing catch up. And so you get this like accelerated, you know, kind of crazy match where they're just dumping fuel on the fire once the fire gets burning. But the problem was, is they lit the fire in the first place. Yeah. So I do think that that atmosphere attributed to it. And then this is just soccer. Like, random crap happens. Like, Rodrigo's little kind of sort of soft deflected shot, like, just has eyeballs that finds its way and rolls slowly into the back of the net. You know, Bernardo Silva takes a great shot against a wall that wasn't set up properly. Camavinga hits a perfect deflection that perfectly angles it into the corner of the goal. Yeah. Phil Foden literally takes a shot where you could walk the ball there and put it up, and you couldn't place it any better than a shot was. And then we talked about Vardy all on Trendy, left back, right footed shot from outside the box and just rifles it home. So there was a ton of random stuff that was, you know, you're talking about 1 in 20 type of things that all kind of came to fruition.
Yeah, don't leave out Valverde's goal. I mean, like, that was an excellent volley back across the keeper.
Yeah, first time, by the first time, too. He didn't take a touch to settle it. Like, that was first time redirecting it to the path it came from for a goal.
Dude, we said on Trendy that it was going to be, like, an incredible sporting event. I really hope people listen to me. Like, that was about as good as it gets for a neutral outside of – incidentally, the Chelsea City game that was 4-4 earlier in the year, like, they shared some of the same DNA in terms of, if you weren't a soccer fan before, I don't know how you could watch that and not be a soccer fan, but clearly those people aren't listening to this show. They're already in. So do you think that this fire is going to continue to burn into the second leg, or you think they're going to try to settle down into a match more like what we expected the first time around?
Absolutely, especially now that with what's at stake. So advancements at stake, I cannot imagine this being a crazy helter-skelter affair unless there is an inciting incident early on again. And because of the fact that I think this is game, like, City's attack, De Bruyne or not, has kind of come up against some of these really good teams and not look great. And they haven't generated great chances. They've generated some goals clearly in this last match, but the chances weren't great. And so I think the Real Madrid to advance is +230. And if it's going to be a nip and tuck thing where one goal is going to decide it either way, like, you're getting 2-1 on this team that just has it in their DNA to figure out a way to get to freaking Champions League finals. Again, numbers mean nothing anymore. It's Real Madrid. Take them at +230 to advance.
We see this somewhat similarly. We just attacked it slightly differently. Like, the +230 to advance, I think, is a good number. I think a great number is Real Madrid to win an extra time is +2,500, Brett.
Wow.
You're getting 25-1 if they advance an extra time. So if they do play this tight affair and they do play it to the point where, like, 0-0, 1-1 are the two most kind of, it's 0-0, 1-1, 1-0, 1-0, the four most expected score lines at the 90, then you're getting 25-1 that they could win it in 30 minutes in some sort of not even random fashion because they're so good. And so I love that number. In terms of what I would give out here, I like Madrid to win in real in the 90 or send it to extra time, and that's still a plus number. So the Madrid 90-minute double chance is plus 115 because I do think this game is going to be exceptionally tight. I do think City at the end of the day is still the best team in the world. I think Real is closer to that level than I previously probably gave them credit for when I wasn't seeing Tchouaméni play week after week. Once he's out there and Camavinga and Bellingham, like that midfield three is just freaking unbelievable.
Yeah,
And so you see that stupid midfielder, you see like these odds. I just don't like City at minus 150, minus 145, wherever you're going to get them at in a game that's fairly evenly matched and all three outcomes at the 90 are absolutely in play. So I'm getting a plus number to take home two of them.
Yeah. And for me, I'm just going to go back to the well that apparently has poisoned. The under of 2.5 goals is plus 125. And I just, the way, and this is the thing with Arteta and Pep, they are going to approach these games trying not to lose them first, and then they will try to win them late if the goals don't break their way as they kind of play more cagey. Very different from Liverpool. This is probably part of the reason why you respect Liverpool, is like they get into a big match. There ain't cagey crap going on in a Liverpool match.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who they're playing. It's, you know, balls to the wall. They're putting their foot on the accelerator. Both these managers, I think, are going to want to do this, which is why I'm actually thinking there's going to be these matches are between two great or four great teams. But I think on both these matches, the goals are going to be at a premium. So I'm going to take the under again at plus 125.
So I hate to do this to you, buddy. I'm fading you. I'm fading you directly because I knew you were going to do that. I knew exactly what you were going
to pick. That's the way to go. You'd make a lot of money if you faded me over the last 5 weeks.
I'm fading you directly. I am taking both teams to score at minus 140. And so that we can both win in a 1-1 scoreline, but because you now think it's going to be even tighter than the first time around, put 6-6 on the board right now. Like double up the previous game, and I'm going to make a little bit of money off it. The other things I do like, besides the Real Madrid to win an extra time plus 2,500, I've mentioned him so many times, but Phil Foden is way too high on his odds. Like if Haaland's going to be minus 125, there's not a world where Foden should be plus 240. Like that relative spread between those two players and their current form and their current contribution is too much. And so I'm going to take the guy with the big plus number because of the way that he continues to outshine, particularly odds at that level. And also Bellingham, I think, if he's going to be a Ballon d'Or level player, like he's going to be a candidate for that, these are the moments where legends are made. And he's at plus 280 to score. Plus, I'm pretty sure he's their penalty taker right now. So you get penalty equity and you get, you know, one of the most talented players in the world to step up in the brightest of lights. And you're getting almost 3-1.
Yeah. I mean, not a bad play to back stars. So not bad.
Back the stars and fade Brett. That's what we're doing right here.
Well, that's the best play at this point.
So let's hit the other one, Bayern and Arsenal. This game is also Wednesday at 3 p.m. Paramount does have a split screen option, so you can put it up and watch both matches at once, which is what I will be doing. This one is also tied on aggregate 2-2. The odds for the 90, Bayern is plus 150, Arsenal is plus 165. The draw is plus 250. This is about as tightly handicapped as it gets. Because Bayern on the minus 0.5 is plus 140 and Arsenal is minus 190. But if you extend it to qualify, it is dead even. They say Bayern is minus 110, Arsenal is minus 110. So it is a straight up old fashioned knuckle dragging coin flip in the Champions League semifinals. And I actually think that's the right line, Brett. Which side of the coin are you leaning to right now?
I have flipped and I thought Porto was the fluke and the Premier League was what the real caliber of Arsenal. And I'm starting to think that they have a weird knack for just somehow railroading some of these Premier League teams to make their attack look a lot better. But they're at home and they generated like a decent amount of chances, but like, it wasn't great. And that attack has some limitations as we are finding out in these matches against Porto and now against Bayern. And now they're going on to Germany to try to win this. And I don't think that's going to make an attack better to play away from home. So I'm taking Bayern to win on the money line in regular time. is where I'm at. And I'm also taking both to score no at plus 150, which I think if Arsenal wins, it feels like it's going to be like a 1-0 type of thing. Because again, Arteta's going to come in. We're going to see Jorginho at the base, which you want a problem with why their attack is the way it is right now. Starting Jorginho, probably the place to start. and so we're going to see that lineup, though, where Declan Rice gets pushed more forward. I'm sure we're going to see the Havertz at striker, which, you know, again, he's bringing value. It's in a different way than what you expect from a traditional striker. But it just means this game is going to be a defensive struggle, I think. And somehow the Kimmich, Davies, Dyer, De Ligt back line looked okay outside of one or two moments where Dyer looked like the double agent he was for Spurs at the end of the Conte era. So, I mean, it sort of held up. I love Conrad Laimers. He's a pressing machine, that dude. He is a very, very interesting player. I don't know if he's anything other than just like a presser and a ball winner. But he definitely makes it hard for you to transition the ball into dangerous areas. So having him back has clearly brought this Bayern team to another level. And look, I mean, Serge Gnabry, that's a huge upgrade over Müller. Thomas Müller has been a great player for a really long time, and he looks like a psychopath. So I hope he doesn't hear this, because he may murder me, but he is already kind of trending towards washed at 34. Getting a player like Gnabry, who is in the middle of his prime, scored the big goal for him, like, that's a huge boost to their attack that'll help them get the win. But I still think that there's a chance that one of these teams has a zero in the score column at the end of 90.
I can't believe we talked about the game for 5 to 6, 7 minutes and we haven't said Sané's name yet. Like, he was so freaking good in that game. I did not know that he could still do that. I mean, I know he's only 28, like, he's not as old as Mueller or some of these other guys, but he hasn't like showed that level of class in a big spot in my recent memory. And I thought he was the best player and the most impactful player on the pitch. That pass that he made to for the first goal, the first equalizer, like, I don't even see how he saw it. Like, it wasn't like one of those classic reads where the winger's cutting in and you have to kind of curl it slightly around the center back, and so then the winger time just running comes into the space. It was in the middle of the pitch between three guys in like a straight line, and somehow he found this, like, you know, 2x2 foot area with the perfect timing that if his guy got to there first, then he could feed through for the equalizer. So it was like a hockey level assist, but it unlocked the entire defense. And then his marauding runs throughout the game, I thought, were just wreaking havoc on Arsenal. And so I am with you on Bayern. It feels weird to take both the foreign teams over both the Premier League teams, particularly when, you know, we're high on City and Arsenal in general. But just for these odds, I'm taking Bayern to qualify at home with a world-class lineup, with a guy like Sané, who's apparently going to raise this game, at an even coin flip number. And my guy Tommy Tuchel's over there. Like, say what you want about his domestic run. Say what you want about, you know, him being embarrassing to not win the Bundesliga, given the incredible amount of resources and talent he has compared to the rest of the league. But I'll take him in a cup game every single time. Every single time, I will take Tommy Tuchel in a cup game. Like, we saw him stare down Pep when Pep had, you know, one of his best teams ever and was at the absolute top of his game, and he beat them with a crappy Chelsea team that was like barely even in contention in his domestic league. And so, I think for all those reasons, I'm backing Bayern at minus 110.
Well, I mean, we're in the same garage on this one, buddy. I think there are some things that apparently European soccer are showing us that Arsenal can't get away with in a knockout tournament, but can still compete for a championship in a domestic league over a lot of games. And I think those are kind of coming out, but we'll see.
And what else it's showing me is I want Tommy Tuchel back. It's official. That's the only guy I want to be managing Chelsea next year. Just mark it down right now. I've now said it publicly. I know it'll never happen, but that is who I want. The other thing that you can mark down is if Harry Kane plays, Harry Kane scores. He has 43 goals on the year. Like, he's having like this Haaland level season. Like, granted, he does it in the Bundesliga instead of the Premier League, but 50 goals is 50 goals, right? Like, he's going to finish with over 50 goals on the season, which is absolutely nuts. He scored in 7 of his last 9, and he's still a plus number. I think that's respect for Arsenal's defense, but he is their penalty taker, and he is their talisman. And I do think they're going to advance, and it's going to be through him at plus 120.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, he's got a great setup man in Sané. So It's gonna be a pretty good match. That one I have pretty good faith that it'll be a good match. City and Madrid might just be pretty clunky until the very end, but the Bayern with that firepower against that Arsenal defense, that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So get through the Premier League this weekend. There's going to be some decent action, but the dessert is the main course in these Champions League quarterfinals. So with that main course, I am going to be enjoying some pints after I rolled out Brett last month, and I've jumped up on him again in April, 5.5-2. I had so much fun on my over 1.5, under 1.5 bet across every one of the big six games last week. And I went 8-2 on the legs. If it wasn't for Chelsea conceding to Sheffield, it really would have been a runaway. Where I am going this week is a bunch more prop bets. I am going to go with that Harry Kane goal at plus 120. I am going to fade Brett for City and Real to both score at minus 140. Chelsea to score first half, minus 150. Everton scores second half, plus 100. I've got that game exactly handicapped, as well as, you know it, Brett, quarterback! Newcastle over 4.5 corners, Spurs over 3.5 corners at plus 105.
All right. Well, for me to break the streak here, I'm going to go trust Liverpool and keep trying to do good thing, good team to do a good thing, and hope that at least the numbers finally start matching up like they're supposed to. Liverpool, I'm going to take Liverpool at the adjusted spread, -2.5 at plus 145. Liverpool is zero at minus 105. That's against Crystal Palace. I'm going to take the under of 2.5 goals in the Chelsea-Everton match at plus 135. Real Madrid to advance at plus 230. And then I am taking Bayern at plus 150 to win in the 90 minutes for one pint, the fifth and final one. We will see if this is the week I can turn things around.
What an embarrassment of riches we have in sports right now. You got the Masters. You got the end of NBA and NHL. You have all this great soccer action, and then you get to follow that up with this Champions League. So we're in the good times, everybody. Recognize it while we're in it. Hope you'll come back and join us for more good times next week with our usual interchange of horrible advice backed by expert analysis. Take care, everyone.